I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Stop.
Hello and welcome to the AI Movie Night. You're joined by your host Rory Greenfield, and I've got a new guest this week, a good friend of mine, Robin Cooper. How are you doing, mate?
I'm not bad, mate. How are you?
I'm good. We've had plans to do a podcast for a while, since you told me you were such a kind of enjoyer of them. You know, you do like to listen to literally all of them, I think it's fair.
I do a lot of driving for work, so I listen to every podcast.
Yeah, I've seen you tweeting. I think we met through a mutual kind of friend. It's Victor, who's supposed to be on tonight, has been on previously, the one that did a Ready Player One podcast. And you were chatting movies with him, and I just thought, yeah, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. And yeah, we've been talking about movies ever since in our little group, and
yeah,
we had plans to talk Denis Villeneuve this evening with Victor, but he is sadly a little bit under the weather, so we're doing something a little bit more impromptu. I will just kind of break the ice a little bit. I'm gonna be a bit of a bastard and ask you a couple of on the spot questions.
Okay.
Nothing heavy, man. Heavy lifting.
Right, should I do it in my bank details and everything? Yeah, is this how this is going to go?
It's essentially just to kind of get listeners used to what it is you like. And I know you're quite eclectic, in fairness, because I've seen a snapshot of your movie library. So it's pretty much a bit of everything. What film did you enjoy the most last year?
Baby Driver.
Give me a top three. Baby Driver. Okay.
I think
it's a good
Baby
answer.
Driver is... I saw that at the cinema and then immediately went the next day to see it again.
Yeah, that's a good cue. I wouldn't say this year, because you've seen Infinity Wars over 10 times, right, at the cinema? I
think. Seven.
Seven, okay, so close, which is quite impressive. I think you go to the cinema more than anybody I know, which is quite an accolade.
I'm in a unique position, given the kind of work that I do, that I have a lot of alone time that is either filled with gym or cinema, and that's it.
Yeah, don't have kids. That changes perspective.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, it's no alone time. It's not much free time. It's certainly not a gym. I run when I can. And I watch movies very late at night and don't get much sleep, which, you know, it's difficult when you woken up at 6 in the morning. Right, so what we're going to do, which is quite impromptu, is we were going to talk about Whiplash, and you said you hadn't seen it. I was like, shit, okay, what else are we going to do? And we came up with Ryan Gosling as a subject matter. Now, being quite honest, Ryan Gosling is a strange, divisive kind of actor. So I'm not sure why people don't like him, being perfectly honest, but there are quite a number of people that really don't like him. Have you got, I mean, we'll talk about a good kind of overview of his films, but do you ever get a sense of that? I mean, there's quite a bit of backlash for some strange reason.
I personally can't understand why. One, he is an absolute dreamboat. But two, he, more than anyone that I can think of in recent years, can command a screen better than anyone without saying a single word.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's the issue. I think a lot of people who aren't cinephiles, if you will, go to the cinema and expect everything, every one of the senses to just be assaulted immediately, whether it be sight, sound, whatever. Whereas it's not always about that. Sometimes it's just about what you're seeing on the screen. And
that's a really good point. I mean, we will talk about Drive. It tends to lead into that, but you've got to look at a film like that, which is so script light, essentially. Do you know what I mean? It's really, really based on almost everything visually in that film. There's not a lot of words, and obviously musically in the score and stuff as well. But him and Kerry Mulligan being the two kind of leads barely speak to each other.
They don't. And actually, I watched that in prep last night after we very last minute suggested this. And I watched it with the wife, who unbelievably, it was the first time that she'd seen it. And she said afterwards, well, she actually really enjoyed it, which surprised me because she doesn't necessarily like violent films.
No, and it is certainly a violent film.
It begins like it could be a bit of a sort of a romantic drama, and then all of a sudden heads start exploding and things just get out of hand. But
It's got a kind of unrequited love kind of vibe going on to it for a little bit. And then you got Oscar Isaac's character that kind of changes perspectives.
Yeah.
But then when shit goes crazy, I always tend to liken it, and I know this is a more recent film, but I liken it to Get Out, which you kind of see what's coming with Get Out. And I think you kind of have a couple of moments when you're watching Drive where you go, I think it's going to get, I think obviously the tempo is going to be ramped up because a film can't really maintain that kind of slow narrative, slow style forever, especially a film that's got fast car in it or a driver in it. But I didn't expect it to be that violent when I first saw it.
I think Drive is very clever. It story-wise, it throws you a few curveballs as it progresses. And I made some notes last night. I'm very professional.
Nice.
almost immediately, the first scene, it's got that amazing sort of car chase and evasion of the police, and you're watching it and he's so methodical and he just knows everything that's going on, and I've made some notes about that. But the next time that you see the kid, the driver, and that's another thing, he's not even got a name during the film.
Exactly.
The next time you see him, he walks onto shot and he's wearing a police uniform, and I completely forgot about that, but you immediately get this misdirect that, oh my god, he's a cop, that's why he can evade all of them. And then it just turns out he's a stunt driver and he's not a cop. And that was the first thing. My wife grabbed my hand and went, oh my god, he's a cop. Of course.
Do you know what? I've not even thought about that, in fairness. I in all the time I've watched that film, and I've watched it, I don't know, a dozen times, I'd say. I mean, I didn't watch it at the cinema, where I'm kind of kicking myself about that, because it's one of those films that really should have been watched at the cinema, because I think that a moment in the motel room when the violence really goes would just be something else. And I love the sound in it. I mean, I don't try and get too technical and stuff. And bearing in mind, we might talk Blade Runner 2049, which is about as technical as films get. The sound quality and mixing and style in this is something else. I mean, they really do capture everything, because it is a quiet film, you know, like a little bit like Quiet Place that came out this year. It's all about the sound effects. It's not about
the dialogue.
Yeah,
it builds so much tension between so many different characters. In the early scenes, or in the very first scene, you've got the tension where the second robber, I think, or the two guys who are robbing, whatever. And the first one comes out, and then they're waiting for the next one, and he's already established, you've got 5 minutes and then I'm gone. And you can hear, just in the background, you can hear a slight ticking as it's going down and it's cutting back and forth, and it's building that tension there. And then you've got the sexual tension between Ryan Gosling and Kerry Mulligan that, like you said, they never actually say anything to each other.
Not a lot.
They just awkwardly look past each other and smile. And then after that, you've got the tension being built up, all the violent tension between all the different players. And like you say, it's just the way it's done technically is just incredible.
Yeah. And I mean, the cast is astounding when you look through this. You know,
I'd completely forgotten until last night that Oscar Isaac was in it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's probably the reason it started a bit of a love affair with me and Oscar Isaac, because this came out and I was like, who the hell is this guy? Because he's just got that kind of swagger and his charisma is ridiculous, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously we talked about it in a recent podcast that we did, and I'm going to forget the name of the film that he did where it's related to robots.
Ex Machina.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously he's then kind of risen to fame and Star Wars fame and everything else. And the Coen Brothers film where he plays guitar, which is...
Inside Robert Llewellyn.
Yeah. Is it Robert Llewellyn? Robert Llewellyn's someone else.
No, it's not Inside Llewellyn.
Llewyn Davis. Yeah. Robert Llewellyn.
Robert Llewellyn's the interior designer guy, isn't it?
I think Robert Llewellyn, I think, might be from Red Dwarf.
Potentially. It's not a very common surname.
Robert Llewellyn is from Red Dwarf and Scrap Heap Challenge, if you're of British origins. You might know what that is. Yeah,
Channel 5 on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's probably repeated on Dave about 80 times a week. That's really pop culture of really low value in the UK. But anyway, Red Dwarf is peak, I must admit. Inside Llewyn Davis. And you know, acting like that, and you go, who the hell is this guy? Because I didn't really know his career. I've not followed much. And this was the time that kind of brought him to my attention. It probably brought Carey Mulligan to my attention as well, because she's obviously quite a prominent British actress, but has really just done kind of films that I wouldn't take a great interest in, and even now, you know, again, she's in Inside Llewyn Davis and she's incredible in that. I'm just hoping she does films that I like. I don't know, something like that. But she's just got that potential. I mean, you know, she's the kind of actress you think would just be walking away with Oscars, a bit like Michelle Williams, who hasn't done it. You know, there's a couple of
things. Similar to Michelle Williams, she seems to be quite selective in what she does.
Yeah.
Because when you go through her, the only films that I can kind of remember her from, she was in the second Wall Street film with Shia LaBeouf.
That's about her biggest film in terms of a biggest produced film.
Yeah, Public Enemy. Oh, The Great Gatsby as well, I guess,
she's in The Great Gatsby. Public Enemy, she has quite a prominent role in that. And then, Drive was kind of her big break, and then Great Gatsby and Inside Llewyn Davis in 2013. And then she's kind of been doing indie stuff again, Suffragette and Mudbound and stuff. I'm quite intrigued what she goes on to do. Because, again, like I said, I do think it'll come a point where she just kind of explodes at some point on the scene. And I know she's not that young. She's probably, give or take, my age. So it's kind of mid-30s. But
she's 33.
Yeah, so it's one of those. And she obviously stood out for me. But then you've got these really esteemed actors. So you've got Bryan Cranston, who was at the height of his powers at that point. Do you know what I mean?
He was right in the middle of Breaking Bad, yeah.
Exactly. And he's the one that talks most in this. You can't shut him up. as much as they want to.
Apparently he got the role because the director, and I can never pronounce his surname.
Nicholas Winding Refn. I can't do it. This is when we need Victor on this podcast. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Scandinavian names, yeah. But the first person he hired for the film was Bryan Cranston, because he just absolutely adored Breaking Bad, which, I mean, you can't blame him.
No, exactly. And then you've got people like Ron Perlman, who is just a brilliant actor. I love Ron Perlman when he's cast in the right roles. I mean, quite
Ron a reduced Perlman, role. Just it. Ron Perlman.
I know, exactly.
For me is Alien. Is it Alien Extinction? Alien Resurrection. The fourth Alien film, and he's climbing a ladder, and he shits himself because there's a spider. He's getting chased by xenomorphs. He shits himself because there's a spider on the ladder, and that just sticks out in my mind. because I saw it far too.
I can't see past a Hellboy or Sons of Anarchy with Ron Perlman, but I mean, he's such a great actor. And then Albert Brooks plays the kind of main villain in this.
Yes.
And that's a surprise because he's generally a comedic actor from my understanding of him. But he's just so good in this. And he is quite intimidating, you know.
Came back to me again watching it last night. I'd not seen it for a few years. I'd seen it quite a few times previously, but I'd not watched it for a while. But Albert Brooks' character, I can't remember his name, but he's very empathetic toward Bryan Cranston and Bryan Cranston's character. And you can kind of see how much the progression of what happens, how much it hurts him.
He has no choice almost. It's literally... You come to a point in that film where you go, he's doing it because he's a gangster, he's a mob boss. It's in his nature. Do you know what I mean? Honestly, but the fact that he's got that cabinet with all those weapons of sadistic nature, you know, all the knives and things. He's clearly not.
Yeah.
Being the nicest of men in his life. Do you know what I mean?
Well, the thing is as well, even though that Bryan Cranston's meant to be a long-standing friend, he doesn't really hang about with slitting the guy's wrist. It just straight in there.
Yeah, that's quite a bold and brutal scene. I mean, there are obviously quite a few, but the people that die generally, bar Oscar Isaac, aren't people you've got any attachment to. Do you know what I mean? It's mainly the villains that Gosling's basically breaking heads on hammers to the every aspect. It's quite bold, and I mean, for me, obviously the soundtrack is phenomenal, and it's well known that, you know, people love the soundtrack and the score because it's really, really helps with the building of the tension, and that film does do that. But the fact that he wears that jacket throughout, and that's got a lot of symbolism, and there's a lot of read into that about the scorpion on the back and stuff.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's got that on and it gets so bloodstained and so, it just sums him up. He's literally almost machine-like. I mean, it's why people struggle a bit with Gosling, because I think he does play emotionless quite well. Do you know what I mean? He plays a really low-key emotional performance, which he does again in Blade Runner, and because he is playing a robot. And it is quite phenomenal, actually, for me, because for a guy that's so charismatic and wants to play those kind of films, he downplays that in this film and in Blade Runner just exceptionally, really.
I think for me, I struggle to call it emotionless, purely because I think you've got to look past the fact that he's not saying anything. I mean, one of the things that I wrote down yesterday is that I don't know if this is Ryan Gosling himself or the writers and the directors, but his character is very much built throughout the film from beginning to end in little touches throughout, from how methodical he is in absolutely everything. Every time he's doing a heist, he puts his wristwatch on the steering wheel so he can keep the time of it. Whenever he's about to do something violent, he puts his leather gloves on. But whenever he's doing anything compassionate with Carrie Mulligan or the kid, he takes his gloves off and puts them in his pocket.
Yeah.
Just little touches like that.
Or even his apartment, man.
Yeah, it's just completely bare.
Yeah, it's just him working on car parts.
And I think that is what Ryan Gosling is really good at. Like I said, not saying anything, but showing you exactly who he is and what he is.
Yeah, I'm not saying he doesn't show emotion. He shows almost everything he designs, to be honest, man. He's so good at that. He just
smile. Does it
really controlled way. Do you know what I mean? He just doesn't do anything, you know. And it's again, you have moments of it in Blade Runner, because, again, we rewatched that last night and a bit tonight, 2049, because I haven't seen this in cinema. And it's mainly because it's 2 hours, 45 minutes. I think that we've talked about that. There is a podcast that I did with the old host, Joe Simpson and Trev Downing, going way back when we talked about Blade Runner, the original, and we did a separate pod on 2049 if you want to go and listen in depth. But it's a phenomenal piece of work, and I love it, but I can see why it's got some detractors. The one thing that came out of it for me is the individual performances didn't get a lot of merit from that film. I mean, a lot of people really liked the film. They loved the way it was shot. I mean, cinematography for Deakins finally got an Oscar.
I think
but they didn't give Gosling any credit for it, which I think is it's harsh actually, because I genuinely think he puts in a really impressive performance because you care about him, which is quite
definitely.
Hard to do. You know, when you find out he's not the kid,
when that revelation comes, it really hits you hard, and you can see it, his entire sort of demeanor when he finds out. Just, he doesn't say anything, he just kind of drops, and the woman says to him, she said, oh, you thought it was you, or you wished it was you, and we all do. And it really punches you. But I think you got it right insofar as the technical merit of that film is so good, it takes center stage.
It's technically better than anything I've seen in recent years. I mean, if nobody follows my Twitter handle, I talk about Mad Max Fury Road quite a lot. And I love that film. And for me, that film, because it's not all green screen, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This film clearly is. But it's not all green screen, and it's a lot of it's done authentically. I just think it's phenomenal. And there's a few other films I've seen recently that have surprised me. There's something on Netflix called Cargo, which I do recommend. Which is
it good? I've not seen it yet.
I really like it. Again, it's set in Australia. It is a zombie film, but not in a traditional sense. It's got a bit of a vibe of Quiet Place in it. And I really, honestly, the way it's shot, it's stunning. They use a camera that pans up, and obviously Australia's got great landscapes and things like that. Really do watch it. Honestly, I recommend it really highly. But there's a few films lately that have really impressed me with how they're shot. I think cinematography... And I could do a lot of talking about it, and I'm not an expert by any means, but it seems to go in waves in Hollywood. You know, I feel like you'll always get a few films that are shot pretty impressively, but you'll get a lot of ones that aren't. But even in your Marvel films and stuff, you look at Ragnarok, some of the shots are pretty iconic in the way they're done now. And I think it's come into more mainstream cinema when it hadn't previously, and that's what's quite surprising for me, and it's more in Blade Runner 2049 than any film really in the last few years.
Well, for me, I love cinema. It's been my biggest passion since seeing Star Wars at 3 years old for the first time, and it just hooked me then, and it's hooked me ever since, every single aspect of it. But the biggest thing for me is that the pictures are exactly that, they're pictures. And if you strip it back to its purest form of art, it's just a picture. So you should be able to get every bit of story from a film just from looking at it. You should be able to turn the volume down and just watch it and just be in. And films like Drive and Blade Runner and Sicario, which is one of Denis Villeneuve's films we're going to talk about, they are just spectacular to watch regardless of what's happening, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. You are right. I think, you know, when someone's producing a movie, they're doing it like a TV show, they're doing a storyboard. Do you know what I mean? So they're doing a group of individual pictures, scene by scene, frame by frame. That's one of the reasons I love stop motion so much, is because you see how much effort goes into every single scene. Do you know what I mean? Because it's shot by shot by shot, obviously all animated together in an mm-hmm. incredible fashion. And that's why I always talk about Leica Studios and Kubo and the Two Strings and those kind of films, because they're just a technical work and effort that goes into them. I mean, I watch films occasionally, and I like comedies, and we had a bit of a chat about Game Night and mm-hmm. I watched Blockers the other night. And look, don't get me wrong, they're a load of fun, and you need that. you need relief for that. But
especially if
those films can make so much more money than films that someone puts years of love and care and attention into. So it's cinema is that. It's a mix of everything. And I think talking about Gosling and you know, sticking on focus a little bit, I think the thing with him is he is a chameleon in terms of what he does.
Well, I think that's a good segue to my favourite Gosling film, and I think it's yours from a conversation we've had in the past, and that's Crazy Stupid Love.
It's mine and my wife's collective, because we watch it quite a lot together. It's one of those films that I will always happily watch.
I absolutely adore that film, and I don't have any particular reason why. I just watched it.
What's the smile on your face?
Yeah, and from the first time I watched it, on my own however many years ago, just laughed from beginning to end. And that final scene in the garden is legitimately my favourite scene in a comedy film ever. Just when everything comes together and then Kevin Bacon shows up and Ryan Gosling just slots him.
And then, I love it too. And when the police officer comes and they correct him with his surname and say it's Lynn Harvey together, it's a genius, genius moment. There's a lot of gifts created from this film because it's got a very, you know, Gosling plays a very interesting character, a very cocksure on the surface kind of character. And then you get to see his real self with Emma Stone, who ultimately turns out to be the daughter of Steve Carell. And it's a really clever film. I mean, people won't give it the credit for that it deserves, but you know, you see all these films nowadays that interlink so many stories of different characters, but you've got some really clever work here because you've got Carell and his family, and then you've got the babysitter that fancies Steve Carell, but then the son fancies the babysitter.
And then her dad's there at the end.
Exactly. You've got Gosling, who's the mentor for Steve Carell to become a womanizer almost, because he's getting over his relationship with a wonderful actress who I always forget the name of.
His wife is... Jesus wept, I should know this. It's
great when you do this live on podcast.
I know, it's good, isn't it? This is
Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore, yeah. And then Aunt May is also...
Oh, she's the teacher. Yeah, I've been sober 5 years, asshole. Yeah, I remember that bit. Yeah, it's a really clever film in the way it comes together. Kevin Bacon is brilliant. He's only in it for a small part, but he's really good in it. And I love the son in it. But I mean, Gosling and Steve Carell together, and we haven't seen that since. And I would like to see
The Big Short briefly together.
Oh yeah. Sorry, but I'd like to see more in a kind of comedic role.
Oh, absolutely.
And it did launch for me probably one of the best on-screen chemistries, and I'd like to see a lot more of it, is between Gosling and Stone, because they're just brilliant together. So, that's his kind of first take of comedy. You haven't seen Half Nelson, because we're going back a little way for
this. I haven't. I didn't know about it till you said it last night when we were talking.
This year as one of my 100 films I've never seen thing, which I'm really, really falling behind on. I've done about 30 odd of 100, and I've got, 6 months left? I'm going to have to really step it up. But I watched it this year. It's a film I've been meaning to watch a long time. He was nominated for an Oscar for it, and it's going back to 2006, so it's almost the start of his career. And that's when everyone kind of started taking notice of him. He's really good in that film. He plays a teacher who kind of is disconnected with the world, but really passionate about what he does with the kids. And it's got some really good relationships in it, but he's excellent in that film. And I think you'll really like it. It's got a lot of heart. And it really impressed me. And I looked at that and went, actually, before that, I remember him for Remember the Titans, which is, I think he plays Sunshine or something like that. Maybe not Sunshine. He plays a kid in that that's quite comical. And obviously The Notebook, which we're not going to talk about.
I haven't even seen The Notebook. So.
No, I might have been subjected to it once. But since then, he's kind of gone from strength to strength. So Half Nelson was 2006, but he never really did anything until Drive in 5 years later. He's in Blue Valentine, which I haven't seen, which is quite a popular film. And then since then, I mean, he's been knocking it out of the park, if I'm honest. I mean, Place Beyond the Pines is a solid film. I've only seen it once.
He's not got the biggest of parts in it.
Is that Bradley Cooper film? Bradley Cooper's got a bigger role in that.
Yeah. I'm guessing we're spoiling just everything. He doesn't make it to the end.
No. This is a spoiler heavy for every Ryan Gosling film.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling dies at the end of Blade Runner.
He does.
That's the biggest spoiler I can
he
probably...
He doesn't die at the end of Nice Guys.
He gets his hands cut off in Only God Forgives.
I don't know if I could talk about that film, because to me it's one of the most disappointing films I've ever seen, only because of the hype I had around Drive. It's the same director as Drive.
I was the same going into it. That I was expecting so much, and I've watched it. The first time I watched it, I absolutely hated it, and I thought, well, I'm going to give this another chance, because critically, it actually...
Well, it divides opinion ridiculously. So if you look at IMDb, it's got 37 out of 100. So that's really low. But quite famously, and I remember this at the time, The Guardian gave it 5 stars. And that's what gave it a load of hype. And some other publications, when it was
at Venice
Film Festival or something
Empire
else.
Empire gave it 5 stars as well.
They might have done. It's one of those films that is very, very niche. You know, yeah. It's got that kind of Lars von Trier, I think is the correct way of saying it. It's that kind of extremity, which some people will love and some people will hate. I said this about a film called Kill List, which is a Ben Wheatley film. He's kind of youngish British director who did Free Fire, which is kind of his biggest film. But Kill List is a film that came out a few years ago, and again, it was on my 100 to watch thing. And I really didn't like it. And it's quite an extreme horror film at the end in particular.
It didn't fit well with me.
Yeah.
It's not an easy watch. And I went back to it because Empire did give it 5 stars, just double checked. And Empire, on the whole, I think they're probably the only movie publication that I consistently agree with. And I have done for many years.
I do and I don't, right? And I'll be honest about this. And I respect all... I listen to podcasts like you do.
Yeah.
And I think it's excellent. And I think they're quite fair on the podcast. I think they're a little bit more reasoned. I think some of the reviews, because they're done by individuals and they're not just done as a collective, are a little bit generous of certain films. And the reason they are, I think, is to get maybe certain access and certain interviews.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of accept that. You've got to accept that Empire is a kind of mainstream media.
I think the reason...
It's not niche. It's not very heavy on critique. It can be, and they're quite bold with, like, Warner Brothers films. They're quite bold enough to say that they're not good if they're not good. But giving, and I haven't seen it, and that's going to be a bit harsh to judge, but Jurassic World, 4 stars seems ridiculously generous compared to what everyone's said about it.
I would say Jurassic World is a strong 3.
Okay.
4 stars
is quite generous. For a lot of people,
is.
Give it 2 and 1. But
I think
know.
I think the issue with Empire is that you've only got 5 there. So you've only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which very much limits you. But there are certain reviewers at Empire that have been there a lot of years since
reading
it that I've always agreed with on the majority of things, apart from Magic Mike 2 only getting 2 stars, which is an absolute travesty, but I shan't go there.
I haven't seen either Magic Mike film.
Oh, the first one is... The first, honestly, the first one's incredible.
I'll have my 100 films list next year.
Ryan Gosling. We should probably get back on track.
Yeah, see, this is what happens when you don't have any time to prepare or do an agenda, or you just basically don't have a clue what you're talking about. No, it's one of those things that Only God Forgives came. It's the same director as Drive, and I thought, this is going to be incredible. And it wasn't for me, and I really struggled with it. And I haven't seen Gangster Squad.
It's good.
Paper Monsters is a solid film.
It's just a solid watch. It's nothing special. You've got some pretty decent performances in a pretty average film. But I didn't realise till afterwards that it's based on true events.
Okay.
Or true characters, not necessarily true events.
Well, I mean, you have got an incredible cast in there, because you've got Gosling and Stone again, and you've got Sean Penn, and it's just like, well, yeah, what's not to be good about that?
Josh Brolin, recently Josh Brolin is just knocking it out of the park with every
film. He really is. Yeah, he is having... You know, Sicario 2, by all accounts, sounds really good. So if he's nailing everything this year, he's pretty much the standout guy this year, because he's been in 2 of the biggest films released this year already. So, yeah, his career at 50, he's in the best shape he's ever been. He's doing more commercial films, but really excellent films at the same time. So, yeah, I give him loads of props, because he's been a great actor since The Goonies, man. So, I think Gosling's career at that point, he's had a couple of years' break, and then it's kind of taken a slightly different turn. He's...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact...
you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just stepped up a lot for me. He's obviously done some indie films, and
he's not made a bad film since Gangster Squad.
No. I completely agree with that. And there'll be a couple of people that are quite divisive about La La Land, and we will talk about it. I haven't seen Song to Song, which I know is Terrence Malick, and he divides opinion quite a lot. So it's a bit of a mixed review film. But outside of that, The Big Short is one of my favourite films of the last few years. I think it's one of the most intelligent films without being pretentious and without being patronising, and really does explain better than documentaries probably what happened in the US housing crash, you know what I mean? And the world financial crash, really, years ago.
It's so cleverly written, because it's funny, it's terrifying. You've got so many different characters on whole different spectrums from each other who just go about the business, and some cross paths, some don't. You've got Ryan Gosling breaking the fourth wall every 30 seconds. You've got Margot Robbie drinking champagne in a bath. And then is it Anthony Bourdain? I can't remember who it is. Who's the chef?
If anyone's not seen it, right, you've just sold the film to them in
Robbie,
words. Yeah, exactly. Drinking champagne in the bath. That is all you needed to say. But yeah, there is a famous chef as well.
Yeah, I can't remember who it is. I'm just looking through the cast.
No one cares. You just said Margot Robbie in a bath. Yeah. No one gives a shit.
I listened to an interview with her after that, and she said that she was only there for a day, but she's in this hot bath drinking champagne, and by the time that she was finished, she was absolutely off a rocker, because she'd just been drinking champagne the whole shoot.
Oh, it's a tough life. It's a tough life.
It's going to be really hard being Margot Robbie.
Yeah, I really feel for her. She's talented and stunningly beautiful, and happens to produce. I think she's trying to direct. She's pretty. She's a force of nature. Yeah, she is. But I mean, The Big Short, again, you're talking cast list. It's absolutely phenomenal. But Gosling does stand up there with Carell, who I think is wonderful in that film. And obviously Bale, Brad Pitt's in there as well. It's a great film, and I really have recommended it to so many people, and I just, you can't really get an ensemble cast like that very often. Who all work together so well without fighting for screen time. And I think Gosling's role in it is just really perfect. It sums him up really well. And it was kind of lead in for me, because it is breaking the fourth wall, as you said. And he's got comedic chops on him. People started to recognize that. And then he kind of stepped up into what would probably be my favorite Gosling film, which is The Nice Guys. And I know you've only seen it once, but quite recently.
I only watched it probably 3-4 weeks ago. It was one of the ones that had been on my watch. I'd missed it at the cinema for whatever reason. There's too many films sometimes to keep on top of, even when you see nearly everything.
I saw this at the cinema, which is quite rare for me. So yeah, no, I did go and make the effort.
This film, I was worried because it had been hyped up so much for so long. But I sat down, I had a day off work, and I just watched it. And just from beginning to end, You've got Ryan Gosling charming the socks off you. You've got Russell Crowe effectively just slapping you in the face with one line as every 30 seconds. And
if he's not slapping Ryan Gosling, I'll be
yeah. and just a really compelling story. And I one that I honestly didn't see how it was going to pan out from beginning to end. It really, you get clues throughout that there is an overarching big bad, you don't expect sort of the path that it's on, with some characters who die, some who don't, and just some of the revelations and then the way that they go about them are just hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it's done by Shane Black, who everyone knows for, I mean, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is a kind of similar style of film, and obviously he wrote, I think, the screenplay for Lethal Weapon, the original, all those years back, and involved in, I think he wrote Iron Man 3 as well.
So he directed Iron Man 3 as well.
Yeah, I think he did, yeah. He's got pedigree, man. I mean, he's just got a way with getting the best out of people, and I mean, I like Fat Russell Crowe, to be honest. I'm a big fan of the guy who just completely let himself go. Yeah, because look at the... Have you seen him later? I saw a picture of him. He looks like Father Christmas, and he's completely let himself go, but he doesn't give a shit.
It wasn't that
long ago. Obviously, Gladiator is a long time ago now, but it didn't feel that long ago before. And then you look at him 20 years later, and he's just completely let himself go. But fair play to the guy. He's doing what he likes. But in this, he's perfect. And him and Gosling have a great chemistry. His daughter in it, Anjuri Rice, I'm just reading, is awesome. She's got really good comedic timing as well, and plays off them both really well. But it's all about Gosling for me, this film. He's hilarious, man. I mean, he's got some really... This is where he uses all of his words, you know what I mean? He's been saving them up since all these quiet films, because he doesn't really stop talking in this film. And he's just hilarious, man. I mean, it's obviously very slapstick, and normally that kind of humour doesn't appeal to me. But the fact that he's on the toilet trying to get his gun out and he can't keep the door open... The fact that he slices his arm trying to break into a bar, he looks at his arm and it starts gushing, and he's in an ambulance 10 seconds later. He just plays it so well. He felt like he was born to make this film, and I didn't know he had it in him. That's when, for me, he went from being a really good actor to a much more interesting actor. Because, you know, that and The Big Short, I thought I kind of woke up a bit to the fact that this guy is more multifaceted. I mean, if I'd gone back and seen Half Nelson all those years ago, I probably would have known it. But, he's made some really interesting career choices. And I think they've only just gone from strength to strength, because...
He's got some real range.
Yeah.
That not many actors can pull off, because some actors that you see in action films all the time or dramas all the time will go into a comedy and you just can't see past... the comedy, or if they go from comedies into drama, you can't see past that. But it doesn't matter what film you see him in, you just believe wholeheartedly he is that character.
He's not a method actor by any stretch. But he does seem to play each role so effectively that because he is, like we said, because he's got so much range. I can see him in each role without him reminding me of a different role, if that makes sense. He's very clever for me for that, because actors are normally synonymous with all the work they've done. You can't really look past Tom Cruise and not think Top Gun for most people, you know. Or he's done so many films, you could say lots of things, but there's normally the first film that springs to mind. For someone like Ryan Gosling, who's probably made 10 excellent films, I don't suddenly think of one. I kind of think of all of them at once, which is kind of weird. But and Gyllenhaal's kind of got that same commodity. It's and you know, Tom Hardy as well, actually. This kind of younger range of actors and actresses as well. Emma Stone certainly in that kind of category. Saoirse Ronan's doing really interesting things, and Alicia Vikander and various man and Brie Larson as well. They're just doing things that they're kind of just crossing genres a lot more. And I don't think actors always used to do that. I think they got typecast a lot more, and it's making it more interesting, because you're just getting an actor's kind of, they're pushing their boundaries a little bit. And I think we're benefiting out of it from a cinephile kind of perspective, really.
Absolutely. I think we're in a very good place in terms of cinema at the minute, because studios are getting a lot braver with
yes.
what they put their money into. I think Disney and Marvel in particular have proven that you don't just need to do your bog standard summer action blockbuster to make $1 billion. You can you can make an Ant-Man, you can make a Guardians of the Galaxy, and it means that films like Blade Runner are getting the backing and the funding that they need. I mean, unfortunately, Blade Runner didn't necessarily do as well as I'm sure the studio, despite the fact it made its money back. But
it didn't. There's a multi. There's lots of reasons behind that. I think it's too long for a start, which I really enjoy it, but it is too long. It's half an hour too long. Which means it didn't get showed enough, basically.
Yeah, because definitely.
You can't put a three-hour film, including, it's probably three and a half once you factor in, you know, every aspect of it, because they have such
trailers
and everything, trailers and everything else nowadays. So you can't put that in many places, not enough times for people to come and pay attention to it for long enough. And it wasn't marketed quite right, and there was a few issues behind it. But look, it still got made. I don't really give a shit, and it's not going to stop Denis Villeneuve still making great films. And we will talk about that.
Blade Runner will continue to make money as time. Most people I think most people probably don't realize the original Blade Runner was an absolute flop when it came out.
Yeah,
it took years and years, and I am the first to hold my hand up and. As blasphemous as it is, I don't particularly like the original Blade Runner. And
I'm close to hanging up, but
I think it's an absolute marvel for the time that it came out, and I can appreciate it as a piece of filmmaking. It's just, there's that many different versions of it, and it doesn't feel to me anyway, because I came into it very, very late. I tried watching it when I was about 12, 13.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was the original cut or the director's cut, and I just couldn't get it.
The director's cut is kind of important for me.
Yeah, and I have since watched the director's cut, and it is definitely the best version of that film.
It goes in phases, though, man. I always think there's films where you go, I kind of liked it, but I didn't, and then I'm going to give it another chance, and then the next time you go, shit, I really liked it. It does seem to happen. Like, I can be in a really sci-fi genre mode where I'll literally watch anything and everything sci-fi, and at that point I love it, and if I'm really not in the mood for sci-fi and one's on or something, I can hate it, because it really is on your mindset, you know. It's the good thing about cinema, and I think going to see Blade Runner, if it was possible in the cinema, the original, that would really just, in the right cut, would just go, shit, this is quite, it would just, it's different, because you go to the cinema a lot as well. It keeps your attention generally. I mean, I know you walked out of Jurassic World.
I only walked out of it because I was tired. I've been working all day. I should probably explain that I go to see a lot of films again and again, but because I literally have nothing else to do, I'm not psychopath.
I don't think you're stalking people at the cinema, man. It's not that upsetting. It's one of those things. It's if you watch something at a cinema, generally, it keeps your attention.
And no, absolutely. I think some films are made for the big screen. Blade Runner, Mad Max. But I think what the original Blade Runner has going for it is Harrison Ford as Rick Deckard and Roy Batty and Rachel. They are just very, very good characters. And I think the Blade Runner world that it establishes is... Yeah. Unbelievable,
I'd like to see more of that. I think 2049 does open that up if it happens. It's so much to explore. I mean, obviously, Star Wars after Star Wars, and I'm cool with Star Wars. Don't get me wrong, I even like The Last Jedi. But there's so much they could do with it that they're not doing. And I think something like Blade Runner, you look at it and go, Christ, I mean, 2049 explored a lot more landscapes and a lot more areas that we'd never seen before. Obviously, we only had one film before, but I'd happily take. Not a sequel, but a spin-off from that universe.
I'd love to see what London's like or Paris is like in that world.
Because Vegas was amazing, man.
Yeah.
You get that shot of Vegas when you realise it's Vegas. It's like,
The establishing shots in Blade Runner, whether it be the original or 2049, the first film, even though it takes about 15 minutes for him to fly into, what's the building called? I can't even think.
No. Not the stamina, man.
The big triangle pyramid. The big triangle pyramid. When he's flying into it, like I said, it takes a hell of a long time for him to do it. But the shot coming in, particularly as well, because it was made, was it 1982, the original Blade Runner?
Yeah, it's something ridiculous, man. It really is something ridiculous.
It's a real spectacle. And that is the one redeeming factor for me for Blade Runner.
Well, yeah, it might come around. You never know. But I mean, you've got to look at these films and take them on surface level. I know everyone loves 2001, and I kind of understand why. But again, people are going off a lot on that. It's a spectacle of the time it was made and things like that. And Kubrick fans who were kind of, I don't know, as crazy as they
obsessive.
Get. Yeah, obsessive as the director was. And I'm calling
I think
that.
Kubrick fans are the Star Wars fans of their time.
Yes, I think that's true. Interestingly, and I don't know what your take on La La Land is, but I'm intrigued. What do you make of it? Because it is a film that, for me, and I'm really not a musical guy. I love music. I adore music, and I love biopics. You know, Ray, and I love Almost Famous and High Fidelity, and then my films growing up. But I don't do musicals as a general rule. It's not my genre. But I kind of secretly love this film, so I'm quite intrigued what you think of it.
I went to see this film with my wife off. It was completely off the cuff. At the time, we were in London. Actually, we were going to one of the Live Empire podcasts.
Oh, nice.
And we got there in the afternoon. We had a few hours to kill, and we went to one of the real sort of, I can't remember which cinema it was, but it was one of the real indie ones in London that's got like 15 seats and it's the most hipster thing in the world. But we went in, we sat down, and it was the most glorious 2 hours of my life. And I came out just smiling.
Nice.
I absolutely loved it. Just for the performances from Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, for the music, for the cinematography, for the story, and the fact that it's not a happy ending, and the fact that they were brave enough to absolutely break my heart at the end.
Yeah, they were. They broke it and also mended it at the same time in a lot of ways. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, I'm still broken.
Okay, you're still broken.
Every time I hear City of Stars on my playlist on my phone when I'm driving, just a little tear, just a single.
Just a single tear.
Yeah. Why would you do that to Sebastian?
I'm appalled you've not seen Whiplash. I know it sounds...
It's on my list. It's on my pile downstairs to watch.
Just it's on Netflix. Watch it. Watch it tonight. It's on Netflix.
I don't like watching things on Netflix if I can get away with it. I like watching it on Blu-ray because I'm a nerd and compression annoys me.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. But
I've got it on Blu-ray downstairs. Don't worry, I will watch it.
Whiplash will blow your mind because it's the same director who did La La Land. And he's almost, at age of 34, I've suddenly become obsessed with jazz in that regard from the two films. And I'm like, how the fuck has that happened? Because I was so, not anti-jazz. I used to play drums. If you watch Whiplash, it just personifies
me. Yeah, I bet it tickled all your...
Yeah, mate. I used to play drums as a kid. My drum teacher was a jazz drummer.
I love playing drums.
I used to play to bands like
England. Was your drum teacher J.K. Simmons?
No. if he was, I might have been a good drummer. I was a decent drummer for a period, but never that good. J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, and I will do a podcast on a few films that I love, including this at some stage.
This is the film we were asking for, isn't it? So.
Yes, and he is phenomenal, and I love that film with every fibre of my being, really. But La La Land, for me, I watched a really legal stream of this when it came out, which I know
you're not. Oh, you naughty little boy.
I know, but it's one of those things that I was like, my missus isn't going to want to see this. I'm not sure why, but I didn't think she'd be keen. And it got that kind of hype, and she kind of got on board, and then went to see it at the cinema. So I'd seen it already, and I saw it at the cinema, and at the cinema, I was blown away by it, and it needed that for it to happen for me.
It's so colourful. From the opening shot on the flight pass, or whatever it's called, the American
road. The overpass, yeah.
Yeah, the overpass, that it just all of a sudden bursts, and it slowly builds up as that, the Here Comes the Sun? I can't remember what the song's called.
Yeah, I'm not... oversold on the first 15, 20 minutes, and I'll be honest about that, because it is heavy, heavy clapping jazz hands.
Yeah, it's real musical.
And
that's one of the reasons I love it, is I grew up, my grandma and granddad used to look after me on a Thursday night back in the day, because my mum worked late, and my granddad would only watch old war films and sort of 1930s and 40s MGM musicals.
Yeah.
So I have a real affinity for a real classic Hollywood film.
It is that. It feels as Hollywood as you can get. Do you know what I mean?
It's a love letter to classic.
It is. And the planetarium and all those kind of scenes. And I mean, the way it's shot, I mean, like I said, we have been quite technically minded on this podcast, but the fact that they shoot most of the scenes in one long panoramic shot, even that opening scene on the overpass, it's quite remarkable. And you'll see that when you watch Whiplash, it's the same style. There's a scene down the corridor when he's drumming, and they pan in slowly, and it's quite amazing. Because it just keeps you focused and attention, and their relationship is really good, but it's, and that's why, I mean, they're charismatic together. They're such a great couple together on screen. You just believe every second of it, really. My favourite scene in that film is when they're at the party and he's got the 80s. when she makes him basically play Iran.
Yeah.
And she's dancing away and his face is just priceless. And that's pure Gosling for me. It's just that kind of crazy, stupid love, sarcastic, patronizing look over the top of his glasses. It's just perfect, and that's when their charisma kind of really shows, and they play it so well, and it's such a cleverly written film. It's such a really well produced film, obviously, but it is romantic. It's got that classic notion of it, and I know it is quite sad at the end, and my wife doesn't like it for that reason. She was up until that point, she really enjoyed it, and that point killed it for her.
It pulls the world out from under, especially when it has that sort of montage of what could have been, and it just shows you on, and then it pulls it away, and you're just like, no, go back, look at his nice little face. And that's another thing as well, Ryan Gosling doesn't do or say much in that final scene when he's playing the piano, and it's just that little look that he gives Emma Stone, and it just, I can still remember the pain.
Yeah, for me, with Gosling in that, and he didn't get the accolades that Stone got, and obviously the film overall, it's Oscar worthy for me, and people don't like it that much, but I can see why Oscars would fall for such a thing. It is classic Hollywood style. But Gosling for me is great in that, because it's all of these things we talked about kind of rolled into one. So you've got that kind of comedic touch, because, you know, the bit when he's playing piano, J.K. Simmons tells him to stick to the playlist. And he suddenly goes from, he wants to play jazz, and he's desperate to play jazz, and then he plays a really perky Christmas song. It's just hilarious, because it's just, his facial expressions, again, are just perfect for it. And you've got that kind of heartbroken element. He's got some kind of anger and angst in there, which he used to, but he kind of gets it all in there. And I'm so glad you'll watch Whiplash at some point, and the kid from that, was due to be cast in this film because he'd previously worked with the director, and I'm so glad it wasn't him.
Miles Teller was originally going to be
in La La Land, yeah, because when you see Whiplash, you'll get the impression that he's maybe capable of that. Do you know what I mean?
Miles Teller. I can't see any.
Well, it was going to be him and then Hermione, who I can never remember the name.
Emma Watson.
Yeah, so those two were really close, but she obviously signed on for Beauty and the Beast and whatnot, and I think he got a bit greedy by the sound of it, and basically has ruined a couple of years of his career. I'm sure it'll come back quite strong, by maybe not taking this role, because I think Gosling, it wouldn't have harmed him either way, but you look at him doing something like this, where you say he's done a jazz musical, and then he's going to now go on and play. Is he playing Neil Armstrong? Yeah, he is.
In First Man.
Yeah, which again is another step, and it's interesting that the director Damien Chazelle is taking a step away from jazz. I don't know if Neil Armstrong is a big jazz fan. I would imagine you'll hear it in his headphones at one stage in the film, because I can't imagine a Damien Chazelle film without jazz in it. But it's going to be really intriguing, and it looks really good. And I think for the director to go in a different direction, and again, kind of Gosling to go in a different like direction, it's just exciting. He's the kind of actor, and there's a few of them, like Hardy and Gyllenhaal that I mentioned before, and always Joaquin Phoenix and stuff that I always pay attention to. You know, Brie Larson's always the same. I'll always look on their IMDb pages and look at what they're doing and what they're planning to do, because I just want to, you know, if they get that combination right with the right director and the right script, they're just, you know, it's going to be gold for me. And yeah, like you said, it's a really good generation of film that we're having, I think, at the minute. People think it's not. I think modern film is as good as it's been in my lifetime.
It really is. I look back at the films that I've seen just in the last 6 months, going to the cinema, and trying to think of in the top three or five would be difficult, because there's just been some incredible. Our release schedule is slightly different to the US. So I saw Shape of Water this year and Lady Bird this year and Dune last year.
Yeah, and Three Billboards was this year, I think.
Off the top of my head, I mean, we've had Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
We've had a Star Wars film that we may or may not have to never talk about, maybe.
No. It'll ever get talked about. I'm kind of in the, I'll watch it on when it comes out. I'm all right about that. I'm not in a rush. Because I've kind of been spoiled a little bit. I know you, obviously, we talked about, and it's not trying to make it obsessive, but you obviously have free time to go to the cinema. But for me, I'm a little bit choosy with it. And it's only because I don't have that much free time. And if I did, I obviously would go a lot. I used to all the time. But it's nice when a cinema, when a film really deserves to be at the cinema and viewed at a cinema as such, you know? And I think, and that's what we're getting with these kind of heavy visual films, but films.
Oh, I've just looked at another list of films that have come out this year that I completely forgot about. A Quiet Place, Annihilation, yeah. Ready Player One, Red Sparrow.
Do you know what? We're wrong. Okay. Annihilation didn't get a cinema release. I'm still furious about that.
We were talking about Snowpiercer the other day, and that still hasn't had an international release.
That's another thing that Harvey Weinstein fucked the world on. So thanks, Harvey.
He'll get his comeuppance.
I hope he does. I really do. It's like we said, it's a really good time for cinema, and I think Gosling is one of those leading lights, along with Emma Stone, who's obviously collaborating with so often, that are kind of at the fore for me. And I just don't get the hate. You know, people go back to a film he's done, a couple of romantic comedies, or you know, even you know, whatever that one I mentioned ages ago that I've had to suffer through once, and that was talking 15 years ago. He's had a career most actors would dream of, and he's only in his 30s, I would imagine. It's kind of astounding which way his career is going, and it's funny. And you look back at, he was one of the Mickey Mouse Club kids, wasn't he, all those years?
Yeah, it was young. Was he young Hercules? I think
something. Yeah, so he's clearly been kind of, you know, accustomed to it, but he hasn't taken a traditional path. And I always have a lot of admiration for people and actors who will do different roles and be bold about what they do. You know, Drive and Only God Forgives are intense films, you know, and then he does comedies and he's doing this kind of style of film, and it's great. He's literally done almost every genre in his kind of shortest career. And he's done incredible films in that time. So yeah, I just think you look over the next 5 or 10 years, I think an Oscar awaits at some stage. And could be
hopefully. He'll probably have to fight a bear to win an Oscar.
He'll have to at least a wild creature of some description. I'm not sure where we're going to go. The bear's been done, but it's certainly going to happen.
Well, him and Amy Adams have definitely got the Leo curse now, I think. Amy Adams more so.
There's a couple who'd surprise you that have never won one. Amy Adams is the one. But Saoirse Ronan's been up like 3 times, I think. And she wasn't going to win it for Lady Bird, but she's been excellent for all the films she's been up for.
Lady Bird is so good.
Yeah, it's a great film. It's been a pleasure, mate. I thank you very much for coming on.
You're all right, don't worry.
we will repeat this and come back and do our pod on Denny Gilmore, because we both
clearly thank you very much for inviting me.
It's a pleasure, man, and it's been great to talk films with you and other kind of cinephiles on Twitter. I think outside of football that everyone talks about, it is good to talk about your other interests. It's nice. It's good for the soul. So, you know, I implore anyone when I'm ranting about film, it's always nice to get involved and recommend stuff. And I've had loads of new guests on this pod. It's been great to do it. I will be looking to do more over the summer. Obviously busy doing the AI comic pod as well. But yeah, there's a lot in the works. So thanks.
Knocking it out of the park with the AI comic pod, by the way.
Thanks, man. We do love doing it. It's a real pleasure for us. And yeah, we're up to about 60 odd episodes now. We've been doing it for years. And yeah, it's fun, man. That's a real passion of ours. But my first love is all film, really, I'll be honest. So I've got a real love of these kind of films that we talk about as well. So thanks for everyone for listening, and yeah, I'm going to be back with you pretty soon.
Stop.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.